It is a panel on the success codes for leadership. And we're going to try and tackle a couple of good questions here. What is leadership? How do you become a leader? And how does leadership change through its different transitions of your career? At the end, we'll hold Q&A. So we're going to hold that last 15 minutes or so when you guys are ready. But I'll moderate all the questions from here, and then I'll look to you for help at the end. So before we get started, I would love to introduce my panel here. Starting from the way, way back is Brian Piller. He is a director in the East Area Service of Sales. We have Jill Larson sitting next to him. She's the Vice President of Talent Acquisition and Global Inclusion. And there's a few other things, but we just put that on. Stop there. And we have Kelly Lane, who's the Director of HR for the Northeast Region. And then we have Lynn Frazier, who's our Business Development Manager out of Services Sales, Global Services Sales as well. These are four people, actually three people. I'm just getting to know Jill. She's new to Cisco only a few months, so the torture hasn't quite stopped yet. The fire hose is warm water, though, right?
That's true.
But these are people who I admire as leaders, and I am tickled pink that they have given up time to give us a day and a little bit of their attention to show you how they deliver their leadership through Cisco. So, Jill, let's get started. Let's start with the big question. How do you define leadership?
Sure, this is the hazing. So I have been with Cisco since July. From my perspective, I thought a little bit about this. I actually asked some folks kind of how they would define it, too, because I think it's an interesting question. For me, leadership is really about inspiring and influencing others towards a vision, goal, or outcomes. I think it requires character, it requires confidence, and the ability to collaborate and influence. I don't think it has anything to do with a title or hierarchy, and everything to do with integrity, vision, and trust. I've been leading since my first job, so obviously when I was 22 years old, I really knew very little about being a manager or being in business, but I had been in athletics and had been someone who had led and been a captain of a team, and, you know, so really going towards a vision of what we wanted to accomplish. And when I think about leaders I admire, it's their character and decisiveness that speaks most to me, and I trust and respect them, and they have credibility, they walk the walk. They're accessible, empathetic, and intuitive. And I think they're also human. So they swear sometimes, and they, you know, have a bad day, and, you know, they have problems with, you know, their kids sometimes, and, you know, things happen, and I think that I embrace that. So when I thought about people that I really admire, that's...
Thank you. Brian, give me your shot at the definition of leadership.
Well, first I want to thank Lynn for having me here today and having this panel. I think it's important for all of us in this room to know that I'm going to say 7 or 8 years ago, Lynn was here with five women from Cisco. And she has led this personally as a personal endeavor to drive Cisco's corporate sponsorship and attendance. So I think we owe Lynn a big round of applause.
And I'll also... pay for that later.
So my team funds all these beautiful ladies to the right. So we sell things. We solve business outcomes and drive customer satisfaction. But in all seriousness, leadership to me begins in the heart. I don't think you can teach it, actually. And I've been challenged on this by professors and by professional leadership counselors, if you will. I think leadership starts every day when you get up. You have a decision to make on what you're going to do. And then taking that, the ability to translate that from your personal life into your professional life, and the evolution of which that takes and the time in which that takes. So for me, you know, a couple notes I put down is, you know, great leaders share versus tell. So think of it as a parent. When I share my experience with my children versus tell them what to do, what kind of responses do I get? It's usually a better one than telling them. And I translate that to my work, my team, my work. And I got a lot of folks that work with me here that can keep me honest. But I really try to share versus tell. Third is I coach versus explain. There's a difference for me. I think a coach leads and coaches and demonstrates versus explaining. No one wants to be explained to. I don't. I want to be coached. I want my eyes to be heard and coach my own ideas. And finally, I'll end with this, Lynn. Leadership success for me is based on the success of the people I work with. Not necessarily people that work for me, quote unquote. I don't like that term. People that work with me define how successful I am as a leader. Because if they're successful, I call it my board of directors. If my board of directors is successful, I will, as a leader in our company and our society, quite frankly, will be successful. Thank you.
Yeah, great feedback, both personal for both of you. Lynn, you get the next one. Who are leaders? Great. Who are leaders? Can you tell that Lynn and I have a relationship here? She told me that our panel better have Chardonnay and time for scarf shopping.
And by the way, I've received none of that at all. So this will be the last panel.
She's got two questions and she's out of here. But with that, who are leaders that you respect and emulate you'd like to chat about?
Well, I think in a general sense, you know, the traits that I look for and that I try to emulate are courage, number one, first and foremost. I look at leaders who recognize their teams and reward their teams. And I also really value, you know, when I see leaders actually raise the bar and try to overachieve, and they instill that in their teams. And it was interesting as I was thinking about, you know, what leaders have I witnessed over the years that really exhibit those traits. And I'm a huge sports fan, so I started, believe it or not, I landed on Bill Belichick. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a good time to be a Boston sports fan, right? But he's an interesting character because he's very quiet and he's very consistent. And I know it drives the media crazy because he won't, you know, he'll answer with, you know, maybe one word answers. But with him, he exhibits such courage during the game, on the field. He'll make what some people might feel are crazy calls and folks may not agree with it, but he always stands by his convictions. He's very courageous. And even off the field, you know, he's dealt with some really tough player issues, as we all know, in a very consistent, kind of calm, quiet way. And, you know, again, when he's addressing the media, he'll always recognize the team. He'll always say, you know, the team did a great job, so-and-so did a great job. But then he'll stop and he'll say, but enough of that. I'm thinking about next week. We're gonna do better next week. Yes, we won this week, but we're gonna do better and we're gonna practice to make sure we achieve that. And he's always raising the bar. And his team really knows that what they can expect from him. He's just so consistent in his approach. And I'm guessing that's a very, you know, kind of a calming influence on the team. So, and that's easily translated into business. You know, if we can be consistent in our approach, our teams will know what to expect. So,
great example. Perfect example. Kelly, did you want to share a thought on that?
So for me, I think what's important about leadership is being authentic. So I think for people to know what they can expect, so that consistency, as Lynn mentioned, but I think that someone is authentic, you know who they are, both in how they lead you and in who they are as a person. So I think as you lead people and you're able to see who they are as an individual, that's what ultimately will lead to inspiring the team and to achieve greater results. So I think it's that piece about being authentic.
Perfect. And the next question actually goes to you, Kelly. How has leadership style changed through your career?
So I have been working in industry for a while.
Leave it at that.
And could really tell some great stories back when HR was personnel. But as I look to what's really important today and what's really going to differentiate the leaders of the future, I think that ability to mentor and that ability to coach is what really differentiates, I think, the leaders of the future. And really being able to, you know, inspire and help understand the talent that is out there in their organizations or teams or the people that are working for them directly, and being able to coach in a way that it's heard, so not telling the team what needs to happen. And certainly earlier in my career, I can remember much more directive leadership style that was around sort of, you know, telling and doing and executing. So I think the difference in really where leadership is evolving is much more around that ability to mentor. And that's really what differentiates leaders in our organization and in other organizations, those people who can coach and really develop the next pool of leaders.
Great point.
Do I get promoted now? Can I do
that? Jill, how has your leadership style changed over your career?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think I've gotten a lot more comfortable in my own skin as a leader. You know, I have always trusted my gut in a lot of the decisions that I make. And I think what I've learned is that sometimes I need to listen more. And so I really tried to, you know, it's feedback I've gotten over the years. You know, we all do the 360s and things. And that was always a consistent piece of feedback, was that I always sort of jumped to the answer. And so I've really tried to be more thoughtful about listening to differing opinions and being more pragmatic about, you know, my own need to be decisive. And so I think it's really served me well, and it's allowed me to hopefully be more accessible to folks. So,
very good. Brian, how does leadership change when the market and the business goes through its ups and downs?
To the point that Lynn brought up, I think is, so every day can be different. Different circumstances arise, different dynamics in the market, in your business, again at home, wherever it might be. And I think it's the consistency of which how you handle that and the calmness of which you handle that, because you know, what I've learned in business, and I share this a lot with my team, is control what you can. If we can take care of the fundamentals of our business and what we do day to day in our lives, it's a good day. We can't control a lot of things. But what we can do is execute and deliver on whatever it is we're being asked to do. And that was taught to me because I've, you know, people that know me, I get highs and lows. And what I've been able to do through coaching and a lot of, you know, self-reflection and self-awareness, and as my hairline went back, right, I got some experience, candidly, is what I got. And I've been able to apply that, the good and the bad, and be willing to take the feedback. Is so important, because that in itself, the 360 reviews, what we talk about is when your peers and your team give you the feedback and it's honest, and you got to be willing to sit there and hear stuff you really may not want to hear. But ultimately, it's what you need to hear to help you to develop as a person first and your leadership skills at following.
Mm-hmm. Great. Kelly, how does leadership change from your position when the market shifts and moves?
I think you'll see leaders who are really confident and comfortable in their own style will just sort of really hunker down, and they'll get more consistent. Mm-hmm. I think they understand that that's important. I think sometimes you might see someone who's less comfortable in what their style is get a little more excitable, get a little more directive. And that's really where hopefully their leadership can help coach them and help them develop. But I think, you know, even in the tough times, the tough times are when you really see someone's true colors. True. And hopefully in our best leaders, you're going to see more of that consistency.
That's a great answer. Yep. Jill, what are the things you do Monday through Friday that make you the leader you are?
So I have to share this so you'll laugh. My executive assistant said she was unhappy that she could not come here and answer this question for me. But I, you know, I think for me, I have twin boys who are 9, and I travel a lot for my role. And so for me, it's about trying to have that balance between what is time that I need to focus on my personal life and what does the rest of my week look like, and how do I, you know, have that balance so that I can bring my best self to both. I think adaptability is really important, because there's a lot of fire drills, not just here, but in every company I've been at. Every week always looks very different at the end of the week than what I thought it was going to look like at the beginning of the week. And I've also gotten a lot better about blocks in my schedule, Because what I found is that I could do, and especially here being new, and I'm sure none of you can relate to this, but you know, I was doing 13-hour days of just back-to-back-to-back one-on-ones, meet and greets, and it was, you know, there's no time to just have a drink or, you know, have a cup of coffee or anything.
Lunch,
you know, restroom, any of those little things. So I've gotten a little bit better about protecting time in my calendar and think time, because I feel like, you know, you process a lot. You're having these meetings, you're, you know, executing on programs, you're doing whatever, and if you don't get time for your brain to kind of work and process, for someone like me, that's really important for me to actually execute and get things done.
So investment and thinking.
Yeah. So those are the things that I think Monday to Friday, by being adaptable, I also can make time for folks that really need me more urgently, which sometimes does happen. Something comes up or someone just needs some, you know, 30 minutes to reset on something, and I want to be able to have that flexibility to do that.
Great idea. Brian, you want to take a shot at that one? The question is, what are the things you do Monday through Friday that make you the leader you are? You have no idea, do you?
No. I want to give a real, I don't want to give a BS answer. I want to give the truth. Exactly. Exactly.
Is this the heckling you were telling
yeah.
me about? Oh, okay.
Boy, I'll tell you what. Here's what I would do. Here's what I've initially thought of, and I mean this, and I got some team members here. It's not what I do. It's what I don't do sometimes. And that's when I trust the people that I work with, whether they're direct reports or they're matrixed, right? Now, a lot of our organizations that we all work in today, it's not a straight line of responsibility. Leadership, you know, goes cross-functional, right? Words like collaboration weren't in my vocabulary, you know, when I graduated college some years back, right? I didn't know what, no one knew what collaboration was. So Monday through Friday, it's, it changes. It the blocks of time I love, it doesn't always work that way. But being able to leave the business for a week, I know it's going to run because I got the right people. I've hired the right people. The business shouldn't run because of my leadership skills, right? It shouldn't. If I hire and retain and grow my people and people development, and that's part of leadership, is giving self to others, Monday through Friday is pretty fun.
That's a great mm-hmm. response. Thank you. Lynn Frazier, how does leadership show up in your personal life?
Well, that's an interesting question for me.
And it's a little setup. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think 5 years ago, I would have answered it very, very differently than I would today. I always kind of viewed them separate and discreet. And back in May of 2008, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, which was stage 2 and unfortunately had already spread before they caught it. So I found myself in a very interesting situation. I had just moved over to this team that where I was traveling back and forth to San Jose from Boston every single week, pretty much. And I was trying to take on more responsibility at Cisco to advance my career. I was finishing my master's in leadership, and I thought I had everything under control. I thought I was doing pretty good. And then I realized, not so much. And so I thought about it, and I had to really ask myself some tough questions as a leader, both personally and professionally. What do you do? How do you handle that situation? So right off the bat, I decided I'm going to use it as a positive, and I'm going to write my master's thesis on the topic, and actually the title of it was, How Do You Lead a Corporate Growth Initiative While Battling Cancer? So I took that opportunity to put all the leadership skills that I had learned over the years in my career in various companies and through my master's program, and I put a plan together. And again, I, with the sense that I needed to do things very differently than I had ever done in the past. And it might sound simple, but I put things in the plan, such as empowering my team. And what was interesting, I thought I was empowering my team, but I wasn't. You know, I ended up designating a lead. And I remember my boss saying, there's no such thing as a lead. You're creating a new position. And it worked. This person was able to take over when I was in the chemo chair and couldn't lift my head off the pillow. And she ended up benefiting from it. Her career grew. You know, she ended up building some skill sets that she really needed as well. And then empowering and delegating to the team. I always thought I delegated well. And I realized while I was out, you know, the team was still waiting on me to say we need to do steps B, C, and D, and I couldn't do that. So I obviously wasn't delegating as well as I thought. So I had to put things into practice to make that happen, to get my hands out of, my hands were in everything. And I just didn't realize it until I actually put it on a piece of paper. And last but not least, just realizing that not everything's in your control as a leader. And by the way, it doesn't have to be. You know, you can ask for help. I know, you know, at the time I remember thinking, boy, that was a foreign concept to me, asking for help. It was really hard for me. But once I let go of this, I have to be this superhero woman leader idea or ideal that I had. It was amazing. I became a better leader. I became a better mother and wife and friend. And my team just blossomed. You know, they all, you know, the positive impact on the team was just amazing. And still to this day, you know, I still try to really pay attention to those very core common sense leadership skills and continue. I never lose sight of it, and I keep them putting them into practice. And, you know, it's tough to share the story with, you know, a lot of folks that I don't know. But, you know, Robin Roberts was just speaking earlier. You know, she had the courage to tape a video blog when she was going through cancer. So I thought the least I could do is share my story, and hopefully it will help somebody, help one of you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lynn.
You're welcome.
Kelly, what advice? Yeah.
She went through it, so here's to her.
And she watched her son get married just recently, too, huh?
Did. Yeah.
Kelly, what advice would you give someone who's going into a leadership position?
So I think the best advice that I ever received, and the best advice that I would give someone going into a leadership, is first of all, treat every position like a leadership position. And so no matter what role you're in, what opportunity that you have, there's leadership opportunities in everything that we do, whether it's volunteering in the community, whether it's helping in your neighborhood, helping your family, your friends, or working in paid industry. So I think looking for those leadership opportunities. But if you're moving into a formal leadership role for the first time, I think really listening, having good listening skills, having that ability to really relate to all the members of your team, and being able to really understand where they're coming from, who they are, what's important to them. Because I think what we're all talking about is there's this human element of being a good leader, and I think that's hard to teach. So I think it's just having that awareness and really being able to, hopefully you get the opportunity to see leaders in action who do lead in that way so that you can emulate them and learn from them. So I think that's our challenge as leaders, is to really hopefully model that and help the next generation of leaders.
Jill, do you want to share some thoughts on that? What advice would you give?
You know, it's interesting. I have a story about that. And when I started at EMC, I ran HR for RSA, which is their security group. And I had a woman who moved from with her husband from India to my team, to the U.S., to do HR generalist work. And she was really struggling. She was very introverted and, you know, was an HR business partner role, so you had to be very consultative to the business. And so she had not gotten married yet and gotten her green card and things, and so there were some things going on in her life. And so what I did was had a conversation with her and said, you know, it's not working out and this is not the right role for you, but I recognize you have these things, so why don't you do a job find, and here's a couple projects you can work on. And that way she wasn't going to be in a situation where she was left in, you know, with her outer family and things. And interestingly, she left the company and it all worked out okay, and she went to Accenture. And she ended up running HR transformation efforts for Accenture. And I hired her back in my last role at EMC to run HR transformation for me. And it was a beautiful fit. And we talked about that moment as being one that she so appreciated the fact that I recognized what was going on with her, and she agreed with me that it was not the right fit. And she felt like that moment was a pivotal moment for her. And I bring it up because it's sort of that do unto others concept, and it's just something that's really important to me. And it was just so helpful for me to see that it came back in some way, because you don't always get the opportunity to see that. You have no idea sometimes who you touch and, you know, who your story touches. And
That to me is critical, you know, is that you just never know, and being honest and forthright with someone and treating them the way you'd want to be treated is really, you know, it always pays itself back in spades. Yeah. It's always the right answer.
Yeah, don't forget it when you're leading, right?
Yeah.
Great thought. Brian, do you want to give your two cents on that? What advice would you give?
Yeah, you'll have more friends going into the job than you will coming out. In all seriousness, be prepared. For somebody going into a formal leadership role, you know, been a lot of little touchy-feely here, which is great, but the reality is we have a job to do as leaders, and sometimes those decisions aren't easy to make, and they're not popular. So be prepared for that. Understand that. Check your motives, right? You know, just because you're a great individual contributor or great in your function doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a great leader of a formal organization. I learned that the hard way, candidly. I got my butt handed to me really early on in my career because, and so I can see some people laughing, but you know, I was the quote unquote, you know, I made my number as a good salesperson, and they promoted me to a regional manager in Boston. I thought, you know, I could do it all, Margaret. And, you know, clearly I couldn't. And, you know, I learned, that's the experience. So, but luckily I was, you know, fortunately I was willing to take that feedback and make changes. The other thing I wrote down here was that, it's a quote by Eleanor Roosevelt, actually, which I really liked. I looked at this last night. It says, to handle yourself, use your head. And she said, to handle others, use your heart. And that's important. It's been, and here's what I love about today. Part of it is the three of us are in completely different functions and different roles. And as I listen, we have a consistent theme to what we're talking about. So that tells me that the culture at Cisco and the culture in our business is alive and healthy, because that culture starts with us as individuals. And what I would challenge you all to do is to go back to your individual business or profession, whatever it might be, and demonstrate culture and passion every day. Because that's how companies, businesses, nonprofits, I'm involved in all of them, are successful. It starts with culture, starts with leadership. Those are like synonymous to me. And I'll tell you a quick story, if you don't mind. John Morgage was one of the founders of Cisco Systems back in the 80s, and I had an opportunity to drive out to Worcester with him back in 1998 to go to Worcester, a technical school that was being built out there. And I was a young, cocky sales guy, to be honest with you. And we had gone through, it was just right around actually the dot-com crash in 2000, right around actually that time frame. And he said, hey, have any questions for me or whatever? And I said, yes, I'm really concerned about the company and the business and the culture. He goes, he looked right at me. He's like, how are you doing today? I'm like, oh, shit. How am I doing? For real. He goes, you're the culture of this company, Brian. You own it every day. He goes, so if you want to make a difference, act it. It's a guy that was worth, you know, had a few commas behind his name and a lot of experience, right? I shut up and I listened to him. And I use that to this day. I'll share that experience every day because I'm reminded of it on a daily basis. So, you know, keep your confidence, use your instincts, have fun, right? Bring energy, bring passion, and keep it simple. Keep it simple and you'll be all right. And don't lose your sense of humor either. Clearly, I'm not that funny.
Clearly. So we're gonna go to Q&A, but before we do that, I'm gonna let each of our panelists give us a final thought on leadership. So we'll just go from Lynn to Kelly to Jill to Brian. Lynn.
I think it's simple. You know, as Brian said, keep it simple. You know, don't overreact. When times are tough, stay calm. You'll work through it. You'll get through it. And be authentic. Be approachable. And always, always look out for other folks that are coming up through the ranks and help them achieve their success as well. And at the end of the day, you'll be very, very fulfilled.
I would just add, I think the listening skills are really important, so be a good listener, practice those skills. And I think the human piece of it, you can't overstate that, is just really let people get to know you as an individual, who you are as a leader, and want to know others in terms of who they are and how they lead.
I think sometimes we have so many things to do that we want to get them done. And I would just say, don't forget, you know, that it's another person that you're talking to or working with. And just make sure you take, you know, 2 minutes for pleasantries or just asking somebody how they're doing. I've really tried to do that, and I think it makes a world of difference. And sometimes you can find out some things you have no idea. If you don't ask, you'll never know, and you can learn some really amazing things. So, you know, take that extra 2 minutes to just ask somebody how they're doing or how things went, how was their Thanksgiving, whatnot. But we always forget that, I think, and that personal piece is really important.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to thank Lynn and all of you on the panel and all of you guys for listening and being here to participate with us. I think I'm getting more out of this than anyone in this room, quite frankly. And that's a learning opportunity for me. And also, as a male, right, I think the only male, Rob, I'll count you as well, in the room.
Did you change?
I did. I am a man. I got to tell you, seriously, from a guy's perspective, right, this is a very humbling, intimidating, fascinating, exciting conference. I really mean it. And I've got two daughters, right? Two sons and two daughters. My 15-year-old daughter will be here next year with me, guaranteed. That's my goal, man. I'm going to ask you publicly to get me an invite for Megan Piller to.
I'm going to cross you.
That's fine. It does anyway. She'll be driving that. Holy shit. Anyway,
she can drive me here.
Here's what I'll leave you with. My mother always said this, and my mother, God, I love her, and she's actually moving up here from New Jersey next week, which is awesome. I haven't seen her and been local to her in 20 years, and she's moving up here. I can't wait. Always remember, someone's always watching you. Yeah. Someone's always watching. Yeah. And make decisions that you would make when no one's watching. Thank you, guys.
So it's time where I turn. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, all the panelists. But this is, we do have a few extra minutes. I know that the session itself for keynote ran over, but we'll take a few questions if the audience has any. I know I'm between you and cutting out of here, so. Anyone want to take a shot at the Kelly?
I was just going to say, I just ask, right? I ask for feedback on a routine basis. I want to know the good, the bad, the ugly, right? So that I can continually improve. And I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of the criticism, because even though sometimes you might look at it and say, oh, I don't know if I agree with that, there's always something. There's always something to it that you need to look at. So just ask.
I think that's the most, is the informal feedback, is asking for it, both from your manager and from your team, and from your peers. So really trying to get that feedback. And there's formal ways to get feedback, but I think the informal network is alive and well, and that's probably the most important feedback.
Yeah. I leverage my leaders under me a lot, too. So, you know, if we're rolling something out, you know, tell me what people really think. Let's gather the feedback. And that way it allows people to be a little bit more open without, you know, feeling like it's, you know, we're going to know who said what. So I try to do that as much as possible. And then, again, just asking for feedback.
And I'll wrap it up by saying, so what? What are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. Got to take action. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'll start. We'll go right down the line. I mean, there is actually an interesting book. It's called Managing Up, and it was one of the required readings in my master's program. And it actually does say that you do have to have different styles mm-hmm. depending upon how what you're leading or what you're managing. And this particular book happens to focus on managing up, and it will talk about the kind of skills that you need to employ to do that effectively. So I'm guessing probably what you're doing is actually just fine because you do need to have different styles, but that would be my take on it.
Yeah, and I would just say, so it's not about, because you sort of frame a message or the way you deliver that message is different, doesn't mean that you're not being authentic. I think it's about adapting the authentic message and what you're trying to deliver to that situation or that individual, and most certainly probably delivering that up is going to need to be handled differently than delivering that maybe down to your team in terms of execution.
I would agree, and I would say that we adjust our communication styles based on how people receive information. So leaders above you probably receive information differently than other folks do, and quite honestly, regardless of the level of the folks in the organization, everyone receives information differently and communicates differently. And it's kind of like, you know, if you have children, you may say the same thing to both of them, but you may approach it differently based on how you know they're going to receive the information. And you were talking about that earlier, about telling versus coaching and that sort of thing with your children. I think it's the same thing. So I don't think it makes you, it makes you less authentic because you adjusted. It actually makes you more perceptive.
I had an ex-wife joke, but I'm not going to tell it. Here's what I heard you say, right? I love your passion, your commitment, and your willingness to look at yourself and look at that dynamic of communication. These ladies here are the professionals, seriously. They're trained, and they're the experts in it. But what I heard is a young woman who's passionate about her career, who wants to make a difference, and you want to grow and become successful. Don't ever lose that.
It's called Managing Up, and I can't remember who the author is.
I'll find it.
Perfect.
Great question.
So, I'll start. So I think I am certain that you probably have ideas already of areas where you could make a difference or you could be a leader. And so my suggestion would be to think about starting informally and just doing it. And so just think about ways that you could start taking leadership and starting to demonstrate that it happens in a natural way. I wouldn't feel the need to ask. I wouldn't feel the need to ask permission. I bet you have ideas already of things that you know you could make a difference doing.
You know what's funny? And this is probably controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's probably a reverse 20-year skill gap. Right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
you know true. Things.
Exactly.
And you experience things that folks that might be 20 years your senior haven't and wouldn't even know. You know, take social networking as an example. You know, when I arrived, I had chipped my nail polish and I needed to find a nail salon. Now I know, you can put it in and, I could Google it and find the nearest location, but there was a young woman at the front entrance and she's like, oh no, the easiest way is just to go right to your map application, type in nail salons, it already knows where you're located, it will actually just, draw a map and you can walk and find, and I knew that for the most part, but I hadn't thought of it. She did right away. So I don't know, maybe you don't have a 20-year skill gap, Mm. Maybe they do.
We'll take one more question.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Ladies first.
Oh, thank you. I would say in a situation like that, it's about making sure everybody knows what the outcomes are. And I think if you're consistent, and I've worked in a number of very matrixed environments on projects where I wasn't necessarily the lead, and what I found is that, you know, your contribution, your collaboration, and setting expectations and vision will actually take you very far, especially if you can go back at the end and say, these were the things we said we were going to do, and these were the things we accomplished. So I would say making sure that, that you don't lose the basics around that of, you know, what are we trying, what's the outcome, regardless of who the people are in the matrix, and, you know, not everybody will be as engaged as others. I think if you're consistent on what the expectations and the outcomes are, I think you could be very successful in that situation.
Actually, I was going to say something very similar. I was going to say you have to define the outcome. But you know what I, and that, this is a struggle for me. This is actually one of the areas I need help with, Kelly. Because I'm used to that span of control, right? And I influence, it's a general manager mindset, which is something new that we as a corporation are adopting and as business leaders and looking outside of your function and how your decisions impact other parts of the organization, both from a P&L perspective and from a resource perspective and OPEX, all those things. So. And those are influenced, right? Those aren't directive. So what I've learned to do is exactly what Jill just said, is define the outcome that the team, that we collectively need to get to. And what roles are we going to play individually to get to that outcome? Because you all have different levels of expertise and skills that are going to help enable that outcome to be met, you know, hopefully. And here's the other thing I'll leave you with. Measured along the way. That's one thing I've learned big time. You know, key performance indicators, I never really cared what they were, right? But I understood the value of how that's important through working with people. Like Courtney's sitting here who does delivery work. You got to hit some milestones along the way to get to the outcome. And checks and balances, that's very important, I think, in a matrixed project type of world.
Thank you very much for attending our session here. Thank you very much to the panelists. You pay me the compliment to give me your time. I'll get you next year again if I can. Enjoy the rest of the day. I know the conference has got a few more minutes with it, and beat Lynn down to the scarf table, okay? Thank you.